Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, speaking to you live from our studio here in Washington, D.C. We welcome you to our show. Introducing myself all over again. I'm a little stuttering, but Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host.
Abdul Aziz Shaheed, assalamu alaikum, Brother Bilal, and greetings to our audience, brother.
Greetings,
how are you today?
Everything's fine. Of course, our topic today is the statistics on unmarried women and economics. I am going to elaborate on that topic. Brother Aziz, I need you to take over. I got to go open the door. My granddaughter's coming in. I'll let you take be right back in about 5 minutes. You got it.
All right. Yes, greetings to our audience out there. Any of the other of our other members out there, directors on? Anyone from Delaware or Oklahoma? And I'd like to let it be known that one of our directors from Delaware, Brother Nadir Rashid, he wouldn't be able to be with us tonight. He had business he had to take care of, so we hope that he'll be joining us next week. But one of the things that I wanted to bring out about, let us know about is, for those new listeners that are listening to our show for the first time, we are the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. And we're in Washington, D.C., and we have a Blog Talk radio show on every Wednesday. Every Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on our show is about the first part of our show, the first hour of our show, is about promoting African-American businesses, networking African-American, helping African-American business network, as well as talking about other issues that affect the African-American community and when it comes to business and other politics. And our main host on the show is Brother Abdul, Brother Bilal Bynum, Sister Aisha Abdul Ali, Brother Nadir Rashid, and Abdul Aziz Shaheed. And all of our directors that I just named to you have information to offer pertaining to what New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association is about. Networking businesses, marketing, helping businesses market and advertise themselves. We have a number of services that we offer you. We offer you legal services from the attorneys that we have working with us. We have certified public accountants that work with our association as part of our association. We have financial planners. We have educators that work with us. All of these directors that I named off to you are people that are educated and have a lot to offer to our business, promoting African-American businesses, networking, and getting to know one another. We also have a membership drive that we're trying to get, because in order to keep this show going on, we have to, you know, we have to pay Blog Talk Radio Network to keep it going on. We've been going on, and very seldom. Matter of fact, this is one of the first times we've actually been on a drive talking to our audience out there to give us some support, if you can, by becoming a member of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. And the information that you would need to are you there, Brother Bilal?
Yes, I'm back. Thanks so much, Brother Aziz. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was going to tell them, in order to participate for our people out there that are new and you want to let other people know, the call-in number every week is 657-383-1372. And that's 657-383-1372. And for our people that's out there that would like to participate on the Internet, you would go to blogtalkradio.com or blogtalkradio.com/NABASSC-URL. And that's blogtalkradio.com/NABASSC-URL. And thank you. And back to you, Brother Belial.
Okay. Thanks so much, Brother Aziz. And again, yes, our audience this evening, we're going to continue. This is our third edition of speaking about African-American women who are unmarried. And our topic this evening is statistics showing unmarried black women and economics. And I personally believe, and as you know, we've been talking about the power of the black dollar and the cash flow and how powerful our dollar bills are, but our dollar bills normally stay in our communities for a period of 4 hours before it goes into more or less the Caucasian community, meaning their banks, their retail shoppings, and many of the other things that we put our monies into, other than our money staying into our own communities. But again, there's not very much reasons for our money to stay into our own communities, because we don't have any businesses to keep our monies in our communities. So therefore, it's pretty difficult to spend monies in the African American communities because non-existence of business or any type of economical growth. That's why I do believe that one of the reasons why we have so many families without a mother and a father, a husband and wife, is because of economics. I believe we've been discussing, a lot of females have come on the station, and they've been talking about the fact that males are irresponsible, they are very neglective, they won't take care of their kids. I mean, we've heard all types of comments from ladies talking about why they are not married and why marriages are breaking up. I do believe that if our economics in the African-American community, especially when it comes to African-American males, if their economics was better as to where they could take on the responsibility of being head of the house, I believe that there would be much more, many more that would be at home and willing to support and be with their families. But because of economics and their economical situations, they may be trying to avoid the responsibility of being the head of the house or taking on their economical obligations. And so again, you will find, I do believe that you will find many males, well, not only males, but even females, whereby if, in other words, low income, and any time you're in a poverty situation, you're going to be talking about, you're not going to be talking about anything too positive. No one who is in a low income, a positive, a poverty situation, and no man wants to come in the house knowing that he cannot provide even a meal for his family. And that's just something that is pretty hard for him, in my opinion, for a male to really notice and look at, and therefore he's out the door. He's somewhere else. He's running from his obligations. But if he had the economical situation, or if he had the proper income as to where he could take care of his family, I think many more families would still be together. But when you have a situation, as again, when you have a situation where a male or a couple, male or female, you have a situation where, again, where poverty is where poverty is more or less in control. I never forget when I was in college, when I was going to Scriers. I had a professor there. His name was Dr. Berrickman. And Dr. Berrickman quoted to me one day, and when I was about to graduate, he quoted me, and he said, Bynum, he made a couple of quotes, but before he finished, he told me, he said, Bynum, remember, when poverty comes through the front door, love has a tendency to walk out the back. I never forgot that quote. I've always done my best to see to it that poverty didn't walk through my front door, because if it did, 9 times out of 10, he's right, love is going to walk out the back. And that's true with your wife and your family and anyone else that you would like to care for. You just can't, because of poverty. So that's why it is so important that we as African Americans start having that cash flow. And the only way we can get that cash flow is to keep our monies in our own communities. Again, we may have told you, but in the next segment of our program, we're going to be bringing on the black banks that we didn't even know that existed in this country. But we have done our research, and we've gotten in touch with these black banks. And many of them have said that they're going to be coming on the radio, introducing themselves to the public, and, of course, telling us much about their banks so the public can ask questions and get to know these banks. But our objective for doing all of this is that we know we need to start putting our monies into our own banks, because our banks, the more we deposit monies into our banks, the more our banks will acquire assets. And if the bank, but the only way the bank can acquire assets is your deposit, the participation. And then after a year of participation, the bank needs you. They want you to borrow monies for whatever type of growth you need monies for, because, again, that's how banks make money, is by the community's participation in giving out deposit and receiving monies. But that's that cash flow. But as long as we're putting our monies into these Caucasian banks, these Caucasians is going to continue just what they've been doing for the longest time, receiving our monies, but our deposits don't come back into our communities. Our deposits continue to stay in their banks, and they make monies from our deposits, along with their own deposits, of course. But their deposits, at least a Caucasian can walk into the bank, and he can get monetary transactions for whatever he needs, loans or what have you, probably with just about no questions asked. And also remember, when it comes to the car dealerships and all of the retail stores and what have you, banks, this is where this is who these folks will send their paper or their notes, and I say their notes, this is the monies that it takes to finance a car. After the dealership is found that you are approved, they send your paper to the bank, and the bank, of course, have approved you. The bank attacks on their amount that they're charging you for the loan of the car, and then they pay the dealership. But so this is a cash flow, but that cash flow continues in their community, and they don't share it with the African-American communities. So that's why it's so important that we start putting our monies into our own financial institutions, so that our financial institutions can participate, the deposits that you're putting into our African-American banks. Now our communities can have that participation because we have the cash flow, and our monies is not staying in our communities when we get it for a period of 4 hours. Our monies are staying in our communities now continuously because it's in our own financial institutions. So I do believe that many of our marriages and family problems, as far as African-American, when we say African-American women's, but really as far as the black family having such a large divorce rate, or having as to where the family is breaking up, and normally there's only one parent in the home, and usually that one parent is the mother. So that's my opening statement about tonight's topic, and we will open our mics up, and we will certainly open our mics up and start getting your opinions on how you feel about the statistics and our continuing episodes of why there are so many African-American females. But like I said, I think it's the African-American families that is more or less breaking up, and the reason why we're having these breaks up. So I will introduce now Brother Aziz, if you have any more comments. If not, I'm going to introduce, I see one of our directors from the state of Delaware, Ms. Juan. Ms. Juan, we'll greet you good evening, and any opening statements that you like to make.
Yes.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm waiting to hear from our listening audience about some of the things we discussed last week. And if not, we can reiterate those things. Thank you for sharing your insights, and they're very, very poignant on the reason why we're having these problems. And, of course, we're looking at the black community. But when we look at America in general, keep in mind that these things are happening across the board. It's just happening more in the black community because that's where also financial instability exists the most. But the decline, even among our white population, is at 60% and more. It's I think, really tickling close to 70%. So I'd like to hear from our listening audience first with your input, and then whatever I've done with research, I can add to whatever the audience feels a need to question.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your opening comments, and we will continue as the evening grows. We our participation is a little slow, but we will continue to, as the audience come on.
All right.
Yeah.
Brother Aziz, any other comments that you were trying to make? If so,
I did want to mention about, you know, one of the things you say about why we have a lot of unmarried African American women. Well, as well as why some become unmarried, you know, divorced. And it goes way back when we were children. Like, I come from Alabama, a place called Fairhope, Alabama, and most of my relatives were brick masons and carpenters. Well, in order for them to find a decent wages for themselves to take care of the families, they had to go north and work and send money back down home. And they did that for the longest, you know. They would work on, in the wintertime, they would come back home and stay home, you know, and do whatever around the house with the wives. And, of course, children were born sometime in the early spring, being that they come home in the winter there, and families grow. But these people were taking care of their families because the white man wasn't paying them no money down there. And the ones that did have those skills, the carpentry, the brick masonry and that, they went north and made that money. Well, a lot of them wanted to come back home because they was able to afford things. They had nice automobiles and things like that. And a lot of the races down south and that, they hated white folks, hated to see that. And they would try to give the brothers and that a hard time. Matter of fact, one of my cousins had his car taken from him by a sheriff in the town, and the car was given to a school teacher, a white school teacher. Just took it from him, said you shouldn't own it. And my cousin was going to do kill both, and the family had to get him on out of town, and he never returned for many, many, many years, 20 years or so, to come back to these places. But that's because a lot of our brothers, they had to go that way. And then you had sisters that had children that was working in the hotels up in New York City, further up north in the big cities. They would get these jobs, stay in these little rooms in these hotels and that where they worked or whatever, and these big homes, and that's what they did. They were made. And they didn't have a big life in that, but the children they left and the family they left back down home, they sent money to them and tried to provide for them. And my point is, this capitalistic society that we live in, it was designed only for the rich to benefit out of it, because the working person will never, never catch up because the taxes always, you know, the cost of living and all that stuff, they never catch up with the real cost of living, what everything really actually costs to live. And also, years ago, we were able to provide food for our families, unlike people who are able to provide food for their families today, because a great number of our people live in cities. And those that live in those cities, it's not the same as people live in the countryside who have skills where they can grow their own fruit, raise their own livestock, you know, the cows, the pigs, the chickens, the food they eat, the animals that they eat. They can raise them sheep, goats, and they can grow their vegetables, and they do trade among themselves, you know, in the summertime. These are things that used to happen in our communities, but in the cities, that type of commerce doesn't exist. So brothers in the city that can't find jobs where there should be jobs, because going to the countryside, going to the suburbs and all that, in a lot of places, there's not going to be no jobs as good as the ones that's in the cities. And the brothers in the cities and that want to take care of their families, some of them find good jobs, but overall, you know, we're not skilled to take the jobs that's really paying the money. And, you know, this is why we should stress that in some of the high schools that our children go to, the jobs, the skills that you used to have years ago, brick masonry, carpentry, auto mechanics, should be, you know, we should have our children, some of our children who aren't interested in or don't know what they want to do in college, and maybe consider some of those things, because these are skills and that have been, since we know, way back when in time, back during ancient times, building the pyramids and that. It was masons that did that, that laid bricks. Carpenters that, you know, built boats and things like that, even though they wasn't using nails back then. They had a method of interlocking wood and other materials together where they didn't leak. And they were able to make chairs, boats, all kind of things out of them. But my point is that a lot of the things, skills that are necessary that we use in society every day, a lot of our children should be able to know, you know, learn these skills as opposed to learning computers, IT. You may not be skilled for that right off the bat. That might not be your thing. But these other things are out there, like I say, auto mechanics, brick masonry, carpentry, plumbing, electrical. These type of skills, and they pay just as much as any other highly paid job. Those jobs right there, auto mechanics. Go get your car to repair. Just go in there, period, to take it in. Auto mechanics, you know, their labor wage is like starting out at, and I'm going to go on a low ball, $50 an hour, but most places you go, all the mechanics' labor is right at $100 an hour on up, depending what type of automobile you're driving. When you're taking it to the Mercedes or other dealers like that that make these more expensive cars, you're going to pay a bigger price. You know, don't buy one if you're not able to pay the price to own these vehicles. So what I'm saying is there are a number of skills out there that our youth can be interested in if they only knew the advantage, the benefits behind taking up some of those skills. We see a lot of the new people, the immigrants that come into America, a lot of them come here with those skills. A lot of Americans don't know. They think they're so smarter than other people, but who do they think put those skyscrapers up in Mexico and who do they think do the plumbing work and electrical work in Mexico? It damn sure isn't Americans. It's the Mexican people. And when they leave their country getting such wages and they come here in America and get involved in this here, it's like, oh, man, I can't believe it, the kind of money and how good it is they're paying for the skills that we have. So, you know, I would like to see some of our youth involved in that also. You know, matter of fact, there are high schools, not in the district, but there are high schools out in Virginia that teaches those same things I've told you about, those skills, as well as nursing, where people or men or women can get into nursing programs, and when they graduate out of high school, they'll have the LPN, licensed practical nurse, which is coming out of high school making a really good salary. And the next step is to go get the RN, which at that point wouldn't be difficult for them because they got 2 years in high school of learning about practical nursing and nursing in itself, and as well as working in hospitals during the summertime on their school breaks and that summer vacation. A lot of our youth don't know about these programs that exist that can really make things better for them, especially our young men, African-American men. Because we know, as Brother Bilal mentioned earlier, that our men want to take care of their families. And a lot of times men they won't marry certain women that are very highly educated because they're intimidated that the woman is making more than them, and they feel like they should be able to offer the woman something. And, and a lot of the sisters nowadays, it's not like before, many years ago, when sisters that did make a lot of money, they didn't mind helping a black man up and standing by him, less long whether the man was making a lot of money, period. They would stay by him. But times have changed because we're living, again, in this capitalistic society that's designed to somewhat keep the family separated because as the rising costs go in this capitalistic capitalism and they're raising all these prices on everything, it's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up. So you got to have both people in the family working. And nowadays we see that they're, both people in the family are working as well as some other family member might be staying there, like their son or daughter that's graduated out of college, and they may have a degree in a law, engineering, whatever it may be, sociology, psychology, teaching, and they're still trying to find jobs that, that can allow them to be able to be on their own. And a lot of the jobs just aren't paying that. America thinks that a lot of their lawyers are making a lot of money, but if you really went and see and Google what is the average salary that a lawyer is making in America, and I can tell you right now, it's less than $80,000. The average salary that a lawyer in America makes. So don't think that just because you're not a lawyer or engineer or doctor that you can't make good money to take care of family, especially for our brothers. Don't think that you can't do that. And that's some of the things that we want to promote, too, on our program and our ideas and information that can help elevate our people, especially young African-American males and females. So that's what I wanted to start out talking about, brother. That's why I believe capitalism has a lot to do with why we have a lot of unmarried, one of the reasons why we have a lot of unmarried black women. We already know the number one reason. The number one reason, and I'll argue with this to anybody, is the reason why, the whole reason why human beings exist. We have lost our spirituality. A lot of us have lost our spirituality in our submission and obedience to the Creator of the heavens and earth. We have lost that, a lot of us. And that is why a lot of the males don't take the responsibility for the children that they produce also, not just finance, but they would be out there struggling in every kind of way possible to take care of that pretty little daughter, that pretty little son. And, and so I think that's the number one reason we've lost our obedience to the Creator of the heavens and the earth. And then the capitalistic society that we live in, how it demands on us to keep just putting money in and money in. And we're just not making enough, so That's what I'd like to start out talking about, Brother Bilal, and I thank you for letting me start out there on that.
Okay.
I would like to share then, based on what direction we just took with the world of finance in terms of job opportunities. Back in April of 23, it started actually in June of 2020, but in my notes here for 23, when I brought these out, black males are threatened with job displacement as a result of automation. And then I'll list the categories for you. But now look at automation, and now keep in mind, since we're looking at the idea of earning monies, AI is going to wipe out not only job opportunities in the black community, but in the communities, period. But anyway, the job categories that are being displaced for what primarily black males used to do: office support, secretaries, data entry, food service, fast food workers, production workers, machinists, factory workers, retail workers, health professionals, business jobs, legal jobs, and agriculture, and of course even teachers. So when you look at those 15 categories pretty much being wiped out, because as crazy as it sounds, your AI and your automation is actually going to be taking place of those jobs that we used to be salaried with. Now, it also says the threat of job loss and displacement, especially for black males, is countered with these 10 career suggestions for black professionals, not just the black male, but for black professionals. And they are consulting, media and entertainment, technology, advertising and marketing, government, not-for-profit investment, education, public relations, finance, and health care. Now, on the statistics part of it, notice this in terms of salaries. Your statisticians are earning, these are the top-paying jobs. This is back in 23, last year, actually, April 23, so it's about a year ago. Statisticians, $87,780. Speech, and they were the fourth. Oh, let me take you back further. The highest ones were a physician's assistant being paid the highest at $108,610. A nurse practitioner, second highest paid, at $107,030. Information security analysts are the third highest paid at $98,350. The fourth highest paid salaries would be statisticians at $87,780. Speech and language pathologists at $77,510. Occupational therapist assistants at $60,220. Wind turbine service technicians, $54,370. The eighth, sonar photovoltaic installers, $42,600. I'm sure you all are getting these letters in the mail about how the government will even subsidize if you will put those solar panels on your homes. Anyway, those installers are making $42,600 on average. The ninth ones, this is out of the 10, your home health aides are making $24,200, and your personal care aides are making $24,000. Now, also, I do have the stats on those who go into education, but they're not among the highest paid. Let me see what else could be a help. Black Enterprise article brought this out. The six-figure salaries among our African Americans, they are director of product, $159,707. A sales engineer, $134,995. A lead engineer, $128,424. Director of marketing, $128,160. Architect, $116,486. We can see that with all of these buildings that are coming up all over the place. A production manager, $116,016. Developmental operations developers, $108,058. And your IT or information technology managers make $100,320. Now, the next thing to keep in mind in relation to career and salary choices, note that the 11 most popular majors going on as of last year, these statistics I took down for April 2023. I haven't done 24 stats, but I'm sure they haven't changed that much. Number one, engineering. Number two, physical sciences and life sciences. Number three, nursing. Number four, business. Number five, computer science. Number six, political science and economics. Number seven, finance and accounting. Number eight, psychology. Number nine, communications and journalism. And number 10 is education. And along with education would go the humanities, liberal arts, and so forth. Ah, it's quite a bit there, guys, but I have another list that tells our young people if you want to be at least safe in your job choices, what to shy away from that we used to do that we should no longer depend on doing, because basically speaking, you're going to have IT and technology take your jobs away. We can see that in the supermarkets. Just last night I heard on the news where people were complaining. They went into one of the retail stores, and they were told, we have only one person working here tonight. So the lines were around the corner because one person was working, because the richer people, as Bilal said earlier, are looking for their retirements, or they're looking to maintain their lifestyles. And so in order to do that, they will hire less people, or they will make your salary not commensurate with what the life living scale is, or they will cut back your time. They might give you a higher, let's say $16 an hour, but they'll also say you can only work for 4 hours and you can only work for 3 days a week. So they have a way of making sure that even though it looks like you're getting money, you're not getting money, because it's going to be cut back with the number of hours you can work, the number of days you can work, and just so many other things that are going to keep you, and this is not just the Black community now, the other communities are feeling that, unless they are in something independent where they don't have to depend on other people to give them their salary. I have some more stats for you guys, but just wanted to give you an idea of what we used to do. We can't do it anymore because AI and technology is going to wipe out those skills that we used to have. Look at the cars anymore. They're talking about having buses and other public transportation where all you do is push a button and the doggone thing is a GPS that will take you wherever you want to go. But anyway, I'll share some more stats with you guys. We might have some people trying to call in with their questions or perspectives.
Okay, thanks so much for your comments. And again, I remind our audience, our topic this evening is the statistics on unmarried Black women and economics. You know, I heard everything that the two of you was commenting on, and both of you was talking more or less about jobs. But when we started talking about, and I think Ms. Swan at the end, you talked about the independence. If you have the independence, African Americans again because of this strong dollar that we possess. And we do. We as African Americans, we are the strongest black income peoples in the entire world. No Africans make the amount of monies that African Americans make. And you're talking in terms of trillions of dollars. The monies that our churches bring in, trillions of dollars. The monies that we spend in retail spendings, the tickets on that, somebody needs to put themselves on mute. I can hear you. I can hear you in the background. But so if you are around noise or keeping some noise, just put yourself on mute until you're ready to speak. I am going to open all the mics up so everybody who wishes to speak will speak after my brief comments. But again, getting back to the powerful dollar that the African American obtains, and I was at retail spendings. Our retail spendings for the year 2023. Statistics shows that we spent $1.9 trillion, African-American spendings, $1.9 trillion in retail spendings. And, of course, taxations, we pay another around $1 trillion or more. So African-Americans come in, and those are just the three of the, I would say, the top incomes, but there are many, many more top spendings and monies that come in a contact with African Americans. So we have a very, very large cash receivables, but that cash receivables that we receive only stay with us for a period of about 4 hours, and the reason's been we don't have any, first of all, financial institutions to keep our monies in so the monies can stay in our communities. We don't have, of course, the retail stores, so our consumers can consume and spend monies in the African-American with that strong amount of monies that we receive. And, of course, our church is the same way. They put their monies into the banks other than black banks because many of us don't even realize any other banks exist other than the Caucasian banks. So all of our monies go back to the Caucasians within a period of about 4 hours after we receive it. And so this is why it is so – but now that we have did our research, we have found these African-American banks. If we start putting our monies back into our own financial institutions, again, our financial institutions now would be receiving, I mean, the largest amount of monies that African-Americans would realize. Now, they're, first of all, the monies that they are coming in contact with, and they would realize it because it would be into their own black banks. And these black banks now, and you can see with the amount of monies that we bring in, we have found a few black banks in our communities, but the few black banks that we found, there is no way they would be able to honor the very large cash flow that we bring in, but it is a beginning, and putting in as much monies into our own financial institutions is a powerful beginning because those financial institutions now would have to grow, and of course we would have to open even newer financial institutions in order to receive the large amount of monies that we bring in. And when you start talking about and this growth, I have no doubt. You know, I was traveling again last week, and within my travels, I was up in the state of Delaware, Miss Swan State, and I went to a, and this is about the third or fourth African American restaurant that I have a visit, and three of them that I've visited in the past, all of them are quite busy with patrons coming in and buying their food. And also all of these restaurants I notice are employing many African Americans. Recently, just over the weekend, I was in Dover and I went to an African American restaurant. And the line was, they were so busy, you had a long waiting line out the door of the restaurant. This is how, and of course, I finally got in and got my order, and I was with my family. I can't tell you how good, I could see why the line was so long, because the food was delicious. Absolutely delicious. I couldn't believe how the seasoning and the flavoring of the food was so good. And also the employees. I noticed their employees, everybody, and had quite a few employees. And the employees was not only busy doing their jobs, but they was quite happy and content. I spoke to one employee, and because, you know, being a business person myself, but being the chairman of Black Belt Wall Street, everywhere I go and I see black folks in business, I normally introduce myself, and I have to talk and see what kind of comments. But the employees was telling me not only are they well paid, but how nice it is to have an African working for another African American. And I've heard these comments so many times. And so, brothers and sisters, I am telling you, business, economics, you know, I've heard this thing and I hear it all the time. From African-Americans, they would tell you, well, I ain't going into business. I ain't meant black folks. Our folks ain't going to support each other. They ain't going. But yet and still, all the African-American businesses that I have seen that is in business, I see all of them are doing quite well. And not only African-Americans coming into the restaurant, but the Caucasians are coming in, too. Why? Because the food is so good. So, again, this is what I mean about being able to grow our communities. But you cannot grow our communities if we don't have the cash flow. If we're giving our cash to someone else, and I use the word give because that's what we're doing, we're giving our cash, trillions of dollars, to Caucasians communities, starting with their banks, because when their banks receive our communities, when banks receive community monies from the communities, banks are selling that monies at all times, from the time that bank opens up at 9 to 5 or whatever time the banks open. They're in business of selling their cash to the back to the community. They need the community to come in, and they need the car dealerships. They need the car dealerships to sell their cars and to send the finance into the bank, and the bank pays the car dealership the monies for sending them their paper. The same thing is going to be true with retail stores. Same is going to be true with just about all businesses. They're selling their paper to the bank, and the bank is paying them as soon as you've been approved. The bank sends whoever that sent them an application saying that this person needs financing. And this is how the bank makes their monies, because when the bank finance you, whatever you are buying or whatever you're financing, I don't care what it's a house or whatever, until you pay the bank back, the bank and you both own the same assets. The bank owns the assets, and so do you. And this is what brings on that value to both of you, the bank and you. But in African Americans' cases, we are putting in trillions of dollars into these financial institutions, but they are selling our monies along with the monies that the Caucasians are also putting into the same banks. The only difference is the Caucasians can appreciate the cash flow that's going back to the communities, but the African Americans, the cash flow is not going back to his community. It's being discriminated against. They tell you even about redlining and all of this, but how can you redline against somebody else's money? It's our monies. We have a right for those monies to come back to our communities once we put them in the bank. It is supposed to come back to our communities. It do come back to our communities, but our communities usually is the zip code of the white community. Basically, and like I said, you don't see that cash flow coming back to the black communities, even though the monies you put into the bank, yeah, you can go to the bank, and I put $10,000 in the bank, and every now and then I might go in there and I might take $100 out. I might take any amount of monies I want out. But as long as you have that balance, that cash balance in the bank is selling that cash balance every minute of the day, and so that's why the Caucasian community is getting so rich, and their communities are so economically more valuable, because all the values is being distributed and spent back and kept right into their communities. So that's why it's so important that we put our money into our own financial institutions, where the monies come back to our banks that those deposits were made. It's going to come back to the bank where the deposits were made. But if your banks are not existing in your communities, then there is nothing that can come back to the financial institution, the black financial institution, that the monies were deposited. And therefore, you don't have a cash flow, and you don't have economical growth. So it's so important that we recognize where these African American banks are, and like I said, in many cases, until within the last month or two, we didn't even know these African American banks even existed. But now that we do know that they existed, we have gotten in touch with a few of them. We're still trying to get in touch with even more, but the few that we have gotten in touch with, we're asking these banks to come on, present themselves, because again, you cannot do business with somebody that you don't even know is in business. And so the African American, and the reason I'm saying use these banks, because they are they're still operational. We don't know we don't know very much about the operation, but we know that they are operational, and so therefore we can consider using them to put our monies in. But at least by having these banks to come on and present their financial institutions, we can get to know each other as the banking and the banking communities. So
I want to share some things along that line because, you know, I'm working with those financial institutions. And you already know because I'm dealing with you directly. There were 43 that I was able to identify, there could be more. And remember, they have branches widespread. And do not think because you don't have a black financial institution, such as a credit union or the bank, in your neighborhood or in your vicinity, that means nothing. Because we were talking about how when you have this technology now, you can be in Africa, Asia, China, wherever you want because they now are doing things where you can do online banking. And so it's not a matter of do I have a bank in my community or in my vicinity. Right. Yes, you do, because you can be anywhere in the world and you can be affiliated with the bank. Now, the next step that I'm doing, and of course, Bilal, you already know that. My next step, and it's going very slowly because I want it to be, because I have to identify which ones of these black financial institutions are independent, because I'm not knocking those banks that are not independent, but they have to be independent for us to do what we want to do, because if they are subsidiaries of other larger institutions and banks, they have to be very careful with how they come on board with what we're trying to do, because they have to please the people who are backing them, and we can respect that. So as I go along, you will find that the 43 are going to diminish based on what their, let's say, I'll use my own term, if their hands are tied. And I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying I'm respecting the fact that they're not independent. So as I get through these, and now I guess I'm a little bit under half of getting to these institutions, once I can separate the independent ones from those who are not so independent, then I will know to forward the independent ones to us, because those are the ones that our constituents, our listening audience, will want to know. And, of course, that'll be the last part of my project that I'm working on with the financial institutions. I am then going, once they are identified, I'm going to let you know which ones are independent. And please, the next component is don't put all of your money in anything. Anyone who does anything about investment knows you diversify. So we're not telling you to put your 100% of your money into any one institution or bank. I don't care what it is. Diversify. But in the meantime, put some of our monies back into these banks and credit unions that we do identify, so that even they, making a few millions, not a few millions from us, they are going to be able to, and they want to do this, put it back into the black community. But let me continue to pursue those that are independent, and so their hands are not tied and can do this with us, versus those who have to rely on those who are backing them, so that we will not jeopardize their wonderful jobs that they're doing for their communities.
And very cautious, very excellent idea. But let me just say, when it comes to banking, and we know that right now our monies are into many, many banks, especially some of your larger banks that are very popular. The problem with African Americans being in putting monies into some of the larger banks, are saying that a bank is not all black, or it may be subsidized, or it could be that the stockholders, the major stockholders of the bank, it could be a black bank, but the major stockholders could be white. To me, it really doesn't really make a difference. The only thing that I would want to know, or hopefully that our community would want to know, is that how much participation in Bank of America, let's say the largest bank in the country, Bank of America, and we know there's probably millions of African Americans depositing their monies in the Bank of America. But my question is this: how many African Americans are on the board of directors of Bank of America? How big is our voice with Bank of America? Is our voice just as big as our deposits? The same thing is true with all the banks. Where is our voice? Are we on any kind of a board to where, in other words, when it comes to the distribution of monies from these banks, is our black voice, is our black participation in these banks? You had just recently here the largest bank credit union, and that was the Navy Federal Credit Union. The Navy Federal Credit Union, and we noted, and even myself, that's where I have quite a bit of my retirement is deposited there. But I was very disappointed when I found that the Navy Federal Credit Union was discriminating and more or less favoring white folks when it came to loans and other distributions of their of our funds. And as a matter of fact, I even called the Navy Federal Credit Union, but no one would dare speak to me, and I didn't expect they would, but I knew I was going to inquire. And they, of course, put on most of the time the sisters that work in these banks. And, of course, they sent the sister to me who said she was a manager and whatever. But I know the sister couldn't the sister had to speak for the bank, and I didn't get into anything that would be argumentative with that sister because I know she was doing her job, and then I didn't want to do anything that would harm her job. Again, you started talking about African Americans and banks depositing monies in banks. Like you were saying, Ms. Warren, you can do bank. I mean, I deal with three different banks. But when is the last time I went to the bank? I don't have to go to the bank anymore. I have no reason really to go to the bank. I can be in Timbuktu, and I can do banking wherever I want to. So no, it's where I deposit in my monies. But the thing about it, how well is my deposits participating back into my community? And we can see that those participations are very poor because the black communities, like I said, where's our retails? We have a black businesses, a few black businesses that are doing very well, but we should have many black businesses that are doing very well because of our cash flows that we put in the bank. So if a person wants to, if a person wants a loan or wants any type of cash flow from the bank, African Americans, they should be receiving many of the things that they're requiring because it is their monies, it's our monies that we're talking about growing and having economical opportunities from. So again,
now along those lines, to be specific. I am not dealing with the larger banks because we know they are not black independent financial institutions. I am only dealing with...
I will be finished in just a moment, and like I said, I'll open the mics back up. But again, African Americans, we have to put our money make our deposits into, we're saying black banks because, again, we don't know of any black banks. So having these black bankers to come on, we will, it gives them the opportunities to present themselves, and we will not have to guess whether they, we won't have to guess what type of business we can do with them because we'll be able to ask them directly. And that's why we're bringing them on. But as far as banking, all of the banks, we want to make certain we can have them accountable to our communities because of the large deposits that we put into these banks. Now, with that said,
I am Bilal. The ones that I am speaking to are letting us know if they qualify for what we're asking for. They're being honest with us. My list here before me, I already have who have the yeses that I've contacted and the ones who let me know from the start because of what they are working with people who have investments in them, they're letting me know, no, ma'am. So the only ones that we've be coming on our show are those who can tell you that they are independent, that they don't have to answer to somebody else as to whether they can follow us. Those are the names that you're being given because the people are being honest. And I have my yes and my no beside those 43 banks. And like I said, now I'm working at maybe the first 20. But they will let me know right away, ma'am, because of who we are attached to, we won't be able to identify with what you're doing.
Okay. And with that said, we will now, our mics are open, brothers and sisters. So the same way you can see, I am communicating with Ms. Swan, and I am communicating with Brother Aziz. All of our mics are open. So is your mics. So if you have suggestions or comments, we welcome your comments, and our mics are open. Welcome to the show. Okay, in that case...
Thank you, Brother Bilal.
This is Aisha.
Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Aisha out of North Carolina. This is one of our national directors. Go right ahead.
I'm just so excited about the upcoming shows with the bankers. Fred, I don't know what the official title of the individual that's going to come on the show, but I would hope that that person, and I'm sure Ms. Swan has made sure that they have some authority to speak and to be able to tell us exactly what their position is and what kind of affiliation they have with the different networks in the African-American community. So I think that this is a great opportunity for us as a broader community to get to know these banks again. And I have been talking to individuals, sending out emails to individuals, telling them of the upcoming radio show, blog talk radio show with the black banking officials. And several of them have sent me emails back and said, Aisha, we didn't even know we had black banks. Now, these are highly educated African-American people, and they're telling me they didn't even know we had black banks. So this is a historical event that's going to take place. And so I would like to encourage all of us to make contact, get those emails out to people so they can come on the show during that time. And Ms. Swan, I want to applaud you for the great work that you are doing because I know it's tedious and time-consuming. So thank you.
Yes, thanks. And, yes, thanks so much. I don't want to be the one that takes up too much of the time talking. Brothers and sisters, like I said, I'm opening the mics as you come on. your mic is open. So if you have a comment and like to share in, like to interject something, go right ahead. We look forward to your comments. Our mics are open to you.
Aisha?
Yeah.
In answer to your question, dear, and thank you for asking that because it's important to know. Each one of the institutions that I have been in touch with so far, including those who weren't able to qualify for what we're trying to do, but those institutions that said they want to come onto the show, right away they refer me to the specific person, their financial officer, who will be working with me expressly on this. It's just not a matter of talking to someone who's a receptionist. They have their own financial officers who are working directly with me.
Okay. Do we have a tentative date when we will start bringing them on?
When I talk with Bilal, and, of course, each one of them has received a letter from me explaining that we meet every Wednesday. They have all of that information at 7 o'clock. And Bilal, because he knows what his topics are for a certain Wednesday, if there is something that he is doing, he knows when he talks with these people to let them know, because he is making them a priority. He is letting them know. Once they tell him when their representative is available, he will let them know that they get priority over the other topics that we may have ongoing. But, yes, they know at this point, and they can even call me. They have my contact information, and I'll forward it to Bilal because he knows if he has anything going on the program that might be ongoing, he needs to maybe continue it, but he's the one who will decide when they are to come on, because it's actually his broadcast. But they know the time is every Wednesday, and we can even ask them. Maybe some of them have a lot to offer. We can even ask them how much time would they like to present their particular benefits. But at any rate, Bilal will schedule them in.
Would there be more than one
That is entirely up to Bilal. Let us say that one financial institution has so much to offer. Remember, some of these banks have many branches, whereas some are only one branch. So we have to find out from them what time. Let's say one bank would say they're just one branch kind of operation. They might ask for only 5 minutes or so. Another bank might have seven or so, and there are some like that. They have several branches, and they might want to talk about what each one of them does. Maybe they'll want 20 minutes of time. Once they talk to Bilal, he will establish with them what they want their duration of time to be based on what they have to offer.
Mm-hmm. And may I suggest, I don't know what the job responsibility is of a financial officer, so at some point, or maybe the night of the show, will you define or Brother Bilal will define to us, or maybe the bank financial officers can tell us.
Actually, it would be best for them to do so. I agree, because in some instances, some banks do not have the kind of funds. Some banks may not have the funds where they offer mortgages, and yet another bank does offer mortgages. It's going to be what that financial institution has to offer. Some have mega things to offer, and some are very simplistic in their offering. So it would be best for them to say what they offer, because not all of them are going to be cookie cutter. They're going to each have their own best things to offer. And when they have many branches, not all branches will offer the same thing. So it's best for them to tell us rather than for us to preclude what they have to offer.
Okay, sounds great.
Our mics are open. Anyone who have any comments, we welcome your comments. All right, let me just say this. Again, and to all of the state directors, you guys, I mean, and I appreciate the fact that, I am the chair of the organization, but I'm not the brain of the organization. Each one of you are directors, state directors, and each one of you, all of our state directors, some of them are not with us tonight, but all of our state directors are state directors because of your qualities, your leadership, your intelligence. Saying that to say, excuse me, and especially in this case, you do not need to wait for me to make decisions on whatever you are in charge and whatever you're doing. You can do all of, and it's better for you, because if you are the principal person that has gotten in touch with a business, whoever we may be getting in touch with, if you're the one, I would prefer, and I thank you for, well, I tell you, it's almost like saying, let's take it to the boss. I am saying, no, I am not the boss. We all are bosses. And when it comes to especially what we're talking about now, and Ms. Juan, like I said, you're doing a wonderful job. And I think that as far as whoever you have made this contact with and have set up such a beautiful rapport, because only thing I need from you is to say that I have 7 banks that are going to come on, and I wish to present these banks on such and such a broadcast. Now, what I will do once you have informed me is I'll set up the program, and I will advertise the program to the general public. So the night of the presentation, everything is already done. We're ready for you as a state director to present whoever is coming on. So you do not have to wait on me. Only thing you need, I ask for, is the informative information so I can promote it. But like I said, as state directors, you guys are decision makers, just like me. The only thing I need from you is for you to inform me on what we are about to do so we can set it up and present it on the date that we have specified. So, again, thanks. I thank all of the state directors. But I keep on saying what I say all the time. If you are a director, direct. And so, again, thanks so much for what you're doing, especially in this case, Ms. Juan, because like you said, these banks, I know we all talked about these banks, and we've been talking about these banks for quite a while, and we Brother Aziz, I think you might have been the first one that went out and found a number of the banks and presented them. We have all participated in this thing, but Ms. Juan, you are putting it together. Please continue to put it together. Don't wait.
Absolutely.
Don't wait for me. Put this thing together. Take charge. Only thing I need from you is when you and I, are not only you, but all of the state directors, we all can come together. But the state director that is in charge of what we're about to present, that's the person that I would say is almost in charge. So please take charge. And so whoever is the person that you need to make to bring on the program, go ahead and do so. You do not
need to. I'll add one more thing then. Thank you for saying that, because you know,
yeah,
I will persist. The persons that I talked to last week, The next thing they, of course, they already had our broadcast, the how to call in. Each one of them said, and I hope your board is lit up, because they all said the first thing they wanted to do was to listen in at our broadcast. So I hope when you look at that board of yours that those people who said the next thing they wanted, now some, of course, had to go to whoever their persons are to approve of whatever they have to approve of. But that's okay. I could understand that and respect it. But most of them were also saying now they wanted to listen in to our broadcast to see what it is like. So I'm hoping that our board is filled up, and I'll get back to you on that later.
Okay, by
all
means.
So you might have people not saying, you might have people not saying a word, but they're also listening in, because I did get that response from some of my financial institutions.
Yes, yes, and that is true. With the few names that you had given me, and I said that I would make contact, this is what some of the feedback that some of them told me, and I definitely asked them, by all means, they don't have to make the appointment with me tonight, but listen in, because, again, we think the more that anyone listen in to our network marketing and business identification programs, especially African Americans, we think that it's going to be good for their business and our business. That's what network marketing and identifying business with each other, because by network marketing and identify each other's business, those who come on, now I know where your business is, you know where my business, and all of those who are listening just may be looking for our business. You could easily pick up a client by network marketing and speaking, identifying businesses with each other. Well, I've been looking for this business. I've been looking for this type of services. So yes, it's we invite all, even if you're not a business person, but especially if you are a business person, I can't see why you wouldn't want to network with other businesses and identify with other businesses, because, I mean, that's what it's all about. We're trying to do business with each other. So, yes,
I want to add to that then, and, of course, you knew this from the very first time about 2 or 3 weeks ago when we decided to do our outreach to our black financial institutions. Right now, my purpose and only purpose is to reach out to them to get their yes, no, or even maybe so. And we have several, as we know, who are definitely identified strictly as black financial institutions. Others have other constituents that they have to deal with and cannot so regard themselves as strictly independent. Now, once I get to the very 43rd person and I know whether they are yes, no, or even maybe so, that's when my artwork that I told you that I will be doing, it's very simple, yet it will be not only a national distribution, but an international one. But I will not share that until I have touched base with my 43 financial institutions.
Yes. Okay. Well, again, we look forward to the banks listening in. We look forward to the banks' participation. But again, we're going to leave that in the hands of any of you. But in this case, Ms. Swan, she's directly in communication with many of them. But with any of you that that has financial institutions would like to come on and talk about doing business, or in this case, talking about their banks, and having our community as to where we can ask the questions that we need to ask, and hopefully we will be doing business with each other. So, again, we're running right along in the broadcast. You know, brothers and sisters, I'm going to be honest with you. It used to be a time when from 7 to 9, I thought was a long time almost, but it's almost now like 7 to 9, ain't nothing but a half an hour or so. We get into these wonderful, valuable conversations, and the next thing you know, you look up and it's almost 9 o'clock. So our mics again is open for anyone who haven't had a chance to speak. I do notice that there was many that a few that was on, and they may have they listened to what they had to listen to, and many of them have dropped off. That could have been some of the banks right there, but I don't know. But anyway, our mics are open. Anyone who have comments, we welcome your comments. Our mics are open.
Yeah, Brother Bilal. This is Brother Aziz. I wanted to mention something. I didn't know if Ms. Swan or anybody else would know this, but two banks merged to form the largest black-owned bank in the U.S. with more than $1 billion in assets. And what we have is the CEOs of City First Bank, that's in Washington, D.C., which we didn't know City First Bank. They must be real low profile. And a bank called Broadway Federal Bank in Los Angeles. They have decided to merge and create the largest black-owned bank and black-led minority depository institution in the nation with more than $1 billion in combined assets under management and approximately $850 million in total depository assets. And the CEO of that will be the CEO of City First Bank in Washington, D.C., a guy by the name of Brian Argott. And this the new bank that they're going to create will be totally black-owned. I'm not sure what the name of the bank is going to be, but one of the ways that we can find out more about that is we can first find about a cityfirstbank.com as well as broadwayfederalbank.com, and that will give more information about those banks. But those are two black banks that are getting ready to merge together, and they're going to go ahead of Bank One that was up in Maine. That was the first one. So I just wanted to drop that information in case we didn't know that already. Well,
I have been in touch with him already, and I'll share with you the update on that merger. Financially, they prospered, but also they have to be very careful now with how they classify themselves as a independent black bank, because the fact is they're no longer independent. I'll share with you on that.
Is either one of those banks the same bank as Industrial Bank in Washington, D.C.?
I have their information, and they're getting back to me I had to leave a message with them. It's very hard to get directly with them. But the person in charge there is a person by the name of Clark. And I did send the email and invitation to them this time for Industrial Bank, and waiting for them to get back to me.
Right, I was going to say, no, they are two separate. City First Bank is separate from Industrial Bank.
Right.
Okay.
City First is dealing with me is in California. They are now no longer City First. They now consider themselves Broadway Bank because of the merger, and yet we have to, and that person is Sonia Wells. However, because of the merger, there are certain things that they have to comply with as a result of the merger rather than being declared specifically as independent. The mergers make a big difference. That merger with the one in Florida brought them billions of dollars. However, they have to be very careful in identifying themselves at this point now as a financially black financial institution that's independent. all these things you learn when you start dealing directly with the banks. What used to be a predominantly known black financial institution, these bigger banks are now seeing the value of merging with them, but with the merger comes changes in how they can identify themselves. Be careful of that.
Yeah, of course, of course. Again, sister, Ms. Juan, that's why I am saying as a director,
yes.
Go ahead and direct.
Okay.
We can only interfere. See, we can only interfere by saying, by putting in our two bits, because we wasn't in on the negotiations. So, again, as a director, go ahead and direct, and the same thing with all of the directors. I've been telling, I say it over and over again, I didn't ask you guys to become directors because you look good. I asked you to become directors because I knew how intelligent you are. And I respect your intelligence just as much as I respect my own. I ain't going to give you more, and I'm certain you ain't going to give me any more. But, again, I can say I thank you. I thank all of our directors, and that's why I confide in all of you, because I know that I have a Black Belt Wall Street have some smart directors. And then I go back to the origins of Black Belt Wall Street, and we know that that started with Booker T. Washington and all of the business associates that he had working with him, including the Greenwood Business District that was famously known as Black Belt Wall Street. And that name was given to him by all the business participants in every southern state in this country that came under Black Belt Wall Street. And of course, during that time, we was showing how rich and how powerful the black the dollar and black businesses was, because look who we created, starting with Marcus Garvey, one of the and even today your largest a financial institution, a Wall Street out of New York, even today, they would never want African Americans to achieve what Marcus Garvey achieved. And so that's an example of how powerful, and not only Marcus Garvey, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that started black Muslims in this country. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, at the SCLC, many, many organizations grew from the business plans of Booker T. Washington and those business partners, the powerful business partners that he put together that grew Black Belt Wall Street. And that's what we're bringing back. And I have no doubt that we have the directors, and we're looking for many more, but the ones that we have is going to contribute to the growth of the Black Belt and the Black Belt Business District. So you guys keep on doing what you're doing. And Ms. Juan, like I said, go ahead and take charge. Just keep me and keep the rest of us informed. If there's something that as a business organization in our private meetings that we need to discuss, then we will discuss those matters. But you keep on being a director. And as a director, you have to do that without me and without any other director. You may have some directors working with you, but you are the director. Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
Thank you. And I'll certainly do that. In case anyone was wondering about that one, I'm telling you, big money was in the merger, and we can understand that. But the Center State Bank of Georgia, they merged with South State. I believe that was the one you were asking about. That merger is a wonderful one for them, financially speaking, but as a result, they can no longer be affiliated as a black independent financial institution. That's that wonderful bank. The Center State Bank of Georgia had a wonderful merger with a much bigger entity, and the billions are in their favor. But, of course, now their identity has to be reestablished.
And, of course, now, when it comes – I'm sorry, go right ahead, Ms. Wong.
Now, at one time, Georgia, if I remember correctly, and I'm a little confused, they had the Carver State Bank, Capital City Bank, and Citizen Trust Bank. Are those three banks also part of this merger, Ms. Wong, do you know?
Each one of these banks has its own name, and I can go to Carver, for example. Carver is definitely still affiliating. Carver State Bank, even though they are considered an independent black financial institution, they specifically say, and so I have to get back to them to let them know how I can work with them. They were very concerned because they have a very narrow group of people that they work with. As the young man said, they only will do bordering states. Why they have that, I don't know. They're not even, remember I said a while ago, some banks have where you have the ability to go around the world and across the country. They cannot. Carver State Bank must serve only Georgia, but finally whoever's in charge of them told them that they can also now serve just their bordering states. So they're very confined, but that doesn't mean we give up on them because at least they can say they are a black independent black financial institution. But keep that in mind for Carver State Bank. They were serving only Georgia. Uh-huh. And then after a while, they were told they could reach out only to the bordering states wherever they are, but they cannot go any further. And what was the other one, dear, that you wanted? Now, Carver Federal, on the other hand, they are in Jamaica. And so because of that, even though they say they're in New York, they mostly deal with whatever they're doing there in Jamaica. So they were not really investing in what we're trying to do right now, and so I'm not even pursuing them now. What was the other one that you asked about, dear?
The other two were Capital City Bank in Atlanta and also Citizen Trust Bank in Atlanta.
Let me see if Capital City regarded themselves as independent black. Capital City, no. They are not listed among the, I don't know why, but they did not list themselves unless they changed their name as an independent black financial institution. And what was the other at the Capital City?
Citizen Trust Bank in Atlanta.
Citizens Trust, and this one, they sent me to Alabama for their Citizens Trust. I don't know why. Maybe that is their main branch, but they said they will call back, and they haven't done so yet.
Thank
you. Oh, you're welcome.
Our mics are still open. We will continue to open our mics for another 15 minutes. Anyone have any comments or questions? Our mics are open for you for your comments or questions. Let me Let's see. When it comes to the large amount of monies, because the, when the day comes, the day will come, and we pray that that day comes, when our churches alone deposit their funds into these, and we could, every so-called black bank, because see, we can call them black banks, but as far as business, it's not good to call yourself a black bank or a white bank. If I was in banking, I certainly wouldn't want nobody calling me a black bank, nor a white bank, knowing that it has too many racial implications, and that's just not good for business. But we as African Americans who have to identify our blackness because we have been discriminated against and we have been left out of business. So, yes, we can say, I'm black and I'm proud, and who is black is this, and I want black that. Yes, we can say that. But the business person, it's not good for business for you to go around saying that I am a black business this, or I'm a white business that. I don't know how long you'll be in business identifying yourself like that. So it's so the community, like I said, as an African American or as a black person, we have been put out of the equation of doing business, and unless we identify. I remember back in the days, during the time of the riots, black businesses said that we're black owned. We're black owned, letting black folks know that, you know, not to burn down my business because I am black owned. So it paid to say I am black owned. To save yourself, but doing a regular open business flow, no, I can understand these banks not wanting to come on and be identified as a black bank. But like you said,
may I share with you on that? And I'm being very forward when I call the banks, these ones who have declared that they are, of course, things have happened. Some have closed down. Some have merged. We know that. That's why I have the 43 to find out what their status is. Believe you me, the black-owned financial institutions who want to be identified as black financial institutions, they immediately say, yes, and thank you for calling. We are such an institution. They don't mind being called an independent black financial institution. I want you to know that. And the ones who cannot be, they are very honest about telling me why they cannot be. So believe me, they know that the black community needs them, and they are very pleased in letting me know right away, thank you for calling, and yes, we are. Now, when it comes to white institution, of course, they don't have to say that. You've never in your life heard white people say they're white anything. I don't care if a retail store or grocery store or whatever. They don't have to say white. But we know that in the black community, in order to get our monies into these black financial institutions, we have to find out they're on our side in terms of not losing our $1.9 billion.
All right. Well,
this is Brother Isaiah. I wanted to say this. That original article came out of the Forbes magazine. And one of the reasons why I presented it to us was because it made me look at two things. Forbes magazine may have put it in there not to let black people know these banks exist. It was to let the bigger banking world know, the bigger business world know, that these few are still holding on. They're still holding on. They're still surviving. But none of them have $1 billion in assets. The biggest one only had $850 million. So they're letting me see how they're still hanging on.
Aziz, why do you think they're merging with them now?
Because they see the money that could be there.
That's right.
But, you know,
with that merger,
I hope it don't take away the power of the blacks to be able to be compassionate when they deal with their black depositors.
Believe me, mm-hmm. That's the next thing we have to look at, because now that they know, even we ourselves are reaching out to the power of the black financial institution and how to put that money back into the black community. Why do you think I've come across 3 banks already that have said they have merged and can no longer be called an independent black financial institution?
Yeah.
Ms. Wan, I had another question. When we first started, we were talking also about the credit unions. Are they still in existence? Are the fraternal credit unions still in?
The one credit, now there are some credit unions who cannot call themselves independent black financial institutions, and we can understand why. Now, when you get into your black academic institutions, and when you get into your fraternities, they definitely are very proud to admit their stance. For example, Howard University, I'm working through them. And, of course, they let you know forthright, naturally so. They're forthright about, yes, we are working. And, of course, they do their federal employees, federal credit union. However, anyone can be using their what they have to offer, but they're specifically working with their employees at Howard. But anyone can be affiliated with them. In terms of your fraternities, the same thing, because black fraternities, they are independent. So, we have some credit unions who are and some that are not.
Okay. Very good.
So, again, Ms. Swan, that's why, like we said, continue to direct and continue to take charge of what you're doing, because if myself or someone who is not there right with the beginning of these business negotiations, we can only interfere. So you continue to, like I said, to take charge and bring these banks to us. We look forward to having these banks, getting back to our topic this evening, statistically, unmarried women and economics. But the truth of the matter is the African-American community and economics. And this is what's bringing on the marriages that are not being performed. This is what's bringing on the family that have broken up. This is what's bringing on so many of our young peoples now raising themselves and getting into all types of trouble because they don't have any type of leadership. They don't have anyone to guide them. Many of them are 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, but all of their life they never had good guidance. And the reasons for that is because of what our statistics are showing, that so many of our families don't have the mother and the father in our home. So we can see, and I do believe that it's economics that is causing the African-American community, and now we actually are losing our families. We've lost about so much because of our economical conditions, but now we're losing our families because of economics. But at the same time, the dollar bills that we come in contact with is in the trillions. And no other Africans on this planet can say they came in contact with just about $1 billion, let alone $1 trillion. Do you know how many billions of dollars you have before you can have $1 trillion?
100,000.
And African Americans have trillions of dollars. Brothers and sisters, if we financial planning, business planning, this is what was, I can't say it was discouraged. Certainly it's been discouraged. Many of us have died because, again, white supremacy knows that money is the power, and we have already demonstrated how powerful we can be when we had businesses and demonstrated how powerful, how independent we can become. Businesses. Yes, go right ahead.
I'm looking at my statistics on what you're saying, and I just wanted to throw some things out for next week in continuing to talk about this impact on the black community with finances. Now, remember, when you look at the majority of us and our families were never rich, but they were rich in how they kept their village together. So when you go beyond dollar signs for how many digits are behind the dollar sign, notice that in America, among your middle and low-income groups, the men are financially still losing ground. This was as of 2023. Women are financially gaining ground among your middle and lower-income groups, and that's showing. Now, that's not black. That is showing America. So that's some more things I want to share when I bring some more stats out to everybody and next week. And the other thing is how the media is now the role model across the board. I'd like to discuss those things. The media has now determined what your lifestyle should be, what your, and as Brother Aziz said, even what your morals should be, along with the fact that the men are losing financial grounds and the women, on the other hand, are gaining more and more financial ground. I'd like to bring that up next week.
Again, like I said, and you're absolutely right.
Yep. Right.
Our emphasis is on the black community, but you're absolutely right when it comes to white females. Remember, 65% of white females are not married. 65, so you having the same problems, families breaking with the white community just like you are in the black community. And yes, I have no doubt that the female, although it's not so true in the white community, the white man is still dominant, but in the black communities, our females was put in a position to be dominant. Remember, we as African Americans put our females through colleges while we worked the fields, while we worked the factories. because we was looking forward to our white females, and they did a wonderful, our black females, and I ain't going to point, our black females, I'm not blaming them at all, because that when they went out and educated them, back and tried and did educate the black man, but again, the black man, for some reason, decided that he wanted to leave the black woman, and I am saying economics. We can, I guess, we're using economics as an excuse, but we really don't know the reasons, and we will continue our topic. To find out what are the reasons so we can correct these reasons.
Okay, and I know our time is out, but along with that, put this in your think banks too, because there's another paradigm, and that is the black and white relationships. The white woman and the black man, this is in marriages. The white woman is divorcing at twice the rate of black women, black wives with white husbands. And they're holding on to their marriages more. Let's see if finances has anything to do with that, because that's the other statistics I want to talk about next week.
Again, that's a continuation of this topic, because this is a very important topic, because, like I said, our communities are being destroyed and our families are being destroyed, and we must correct. Until the next time, brothers and sisters, thanks so much.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation, would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say. And how long have you held your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation, would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?